All right, back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590. The Fan, reminder that we are a half hour away-ish from taking your calls. Maybe it's a little too early to get in the queue, but get in there before it's too late, because we expect there to be a lot of callers this morning, a lot of heat. You got questions, you got comments, you've got observations. How do you feel after the Maple Leafs fall behind 0-2 to the Florida Panthers in round two of the Stanley Cup playoffs? Disappointment, I'm sure. But if there's optimism, let us know about that as well. We'd love to hear your comments after game two. Until then, we'll bring in our next guest, Anthony Petrelli, writer for Maple Leafs Hot Stove and Yahoo Sports Canada, and attendee in person of game two. Anthony, good morning. Excuse me. How we doing?
Good morning. I don't know. Now I feel like I need to take blame for last night for being there.
Well, let me just tell you, I went to every other game and they lost. So I took one for the team and I said, I'm not going last night. And they still
lost.
That go? So I don't think any of us have the impact, unfortunately, that we think we do. So, you know,
maybe.
I don't take the blame.
Here's a theory. The Leafs are the issue.
That's strange.
The Toronto Maple Leafs might be the issue. Sheldon Keefe last night in his postgame, Anthony said that the mistakes were baffling. There was a couple things that were baffling, but if you're, you know, thinking about the word baffling and thinking about that performance, what was most surprising, most unexplainable to you?
The weird thing is after one, it felt like the Leafs played really well, but it was only 2-1, and Samsonov had to make a few saves down the stretch of that period to keep it 2-1. So I understand what he's saying in terms of, okay, well, it was baffling. Why did we start the second period that way? But really, if you looked at it, it was like, were they even aware of the situation at hand at that point? Because you kind of felt leaving the first, they should have been up by more than one, right? It felt like they had a really good period. But when you really looked at it, it's just a 2-1 game. Samsonov robbed Ekblad at the end of the period. Cousins just kind of skated freely through the neutral zone, shoveled one off to Tkachuk, who got to walk in and get a free shot on goal. And it was almost like this should have, to them, felt like a 0-0 game again, but it hasn't. And it just kind of feels as a team, they've done a lot of things so far this series that really didn't align or really don't align to what has made them successful this season. Like, this has not been their winning formula this year of playing one, free-flowing, run-and-gun, trade-chances offense, and two, the way that they're kind of deploying their team. Like, they're basically have been a five-forward team so far in the second round. I think everyone knows who the five forwards are. But, like, Nola Chari's been their seventh forward in ice time, playing, like, 12 minutes a night. That is not how the Leafs played hockey all season. Like, they generally ran three lines.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a departure from, I think, what we saw the regular season. There was a shift to Tampa Bay, and now there's been a shift to Florida. I like that you mentioned the first period, because I was sitting with Ben Ennis at the game, and he said, wow, it's really disappointing if they don't get out of this period with a two-goal lead. And then Samsonov immediately makes a massive save to make sure that it's not a tie game going into the first intermission. And yeah, it kind of seemed like, I don't know, it felt like it was maybe going to be an easy game. Maybe they felt that. Maybe they felt, wow, there's absolutely no resistance here. And then finally, there was a pushback from Florida, and the Leafs didn't know, at least for a moment, how to deal with it. But when you do, like, look at the differences between the regular season and now, Tampa and now, how much credit do we have to give, if any, to Florida for either lulling them into this, for forcing them to play a certain way? I mean, I know they're not in charge of Sheldon Keefe's usage, although you could kind of argue Matthew Tkachuk was in game one. But, like, how has Florida had a role in forcing the Maple Leafs to do things that are maybe uncharacteristic?
I think in terms of lulling, Florida probably gets credit for game one, but you don't get credit for game two. Like, game two, you're at home ice. The Leafs got to figure that out. I mean, that part's on them. But where I do think Florida gets credit is I think they're a better team than a lot of people cared to give them credit for going into the series, right? And I was on with JD earlier before the series, and we were talking about it. You know, they have three lines, like, there's three legitimately solid lines. They are deep down the middle. Like, I know he's public enemy number one right now, but Sam Bennett's a really good player. He's their second line center. He's really good. right? Like, Anton Lundell is a really good third line center, and I understand what the Leafs three line center group looks like. But you know, O'Reilly's obviously battling something. They moved Tavares to the wing a ton. I think in part as an indictment to his play as a center. Florida's young and fresh down the middle. The Leafs are not. And now we're in round two. So that seems to be catching up to Toronto, and Florida seems to have some legs and some energy there, right? If, you know, you're at the game too, you see it. They buzz around, they hit a lot. They have some skill. You know, they have one good defense pairing and Brandon Montour is good. But they're not as bad of a team as everyone thought they were, but the Leafs also need to kind of figure it out and make Bobrovsky's life a lot more difficult than they have so far.
Yeah, I think Bobrovsky's the natural X factor point to bring up next is the way he's just stood on his head in some big moments. You know, they were able to find two in the first period, but after that, he shut the door. And they did give a pretty admirable push, but not enough to find a way. Do they need to change maybe their approach, maybe more of the Vasilevsky approach, which is pucks on net, traffic, stop trying to make the pretty goals, but just pepper the guy with shots, and hopefully he gets out of his Vezina winning ways and comes back down to earth?
Yeah, I think, like, I mean, if we look back at it and we look at all the saves that he's making and everything that's compiling into highlight reels, the common theme is it's Bobrovsky one-on-one against the Leaf, or, you know, like, he's seeing the puck cleanly. There's no traffic in front of him. There's really just, you know, what was their first goal last night? It was the fourth line, and all they did was forecheck, and Shen froze a forward at the top and threw very, very little to the net. I mean, there wasn't much to that shot, which he did on purpose, so good for him. And it was just traffic in front by Camp. The Leafs win a rebound, and Kerfoot shoots it home. Like, there was nothing pretty about it. Even the second goal was a scrum in front of the net on the power play before it was fished out, and Marner did make a nice pass, but Matthews was still right there when the goal was happening, right in front of the net. And everything else has really just been, they've had chances off the rush. You're not going to tell them not to take, you know, odd man rushes whenever you can, but when they're in the zone, they've really gotten away from that mentality of let's get traffic in front, let's throw pucks on net, and letting things kind of develop that way. So yeah, to your point, like, they need to get that back. I don't know why they ever stopped. Like, that's just playoff hockey. That's as much focus as there was on Andrei Vasilevsky for it. Like, that's literally just playoff hockey.
So the other end of the net, Samsonov, he's been the lesser of two goalies this series. He won the goaltending battle in round one. I don't think it's a full blame on Samsonov for the first two games, but he is getting outplayed by the other goaltender on the other end of the net. So where are you at with Samsonov's performance after two? Sometimes you get the solo cam on him and he looks like he's a little shaken up, like looks like he got a couple pucks in the head. Just a confidence level that Samsonov can, you know, elevate a little bit more and make this more of a competitive goaltending battle.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. They've had the worst goalie of the two so far, and goaltending is a great equalizer at the end of the day, right? Like, if you have the worst goalie, it's hard to win games. They've had the worst of the two goalies. Bobrovsky's been really good, and I wouldn't even necessarily say Samsonov's been bad. He let in one really bad goal last night, though. Like, that Barkov goal can't happen. Like, that is a really bad goal. Although I did see on the replay, it did seem to kind of dip a little bit, but neither here nor there. He still should have saved it. He did keep them in the game, though. I mean, Verhaeghe had a breakaway. He really hadn't seen much, any action at that point of that period. And so I appreciate, you know, trying to look for some level of positivity, but against Tampa, I wouldn't say he was necessarily lights out, but he was better than Vasilevsky and they won. It was probably the first time we can say since 2017 that the Leafs had the best goalie in the series. Like, it's probably not coincidence that they won given that situation. So I think part of it is Bob probably has to come back down to earth. If Samsonov can avoid giving up one really bad one, I think they'd be in an okay place in net, but both of those things are big ifs at this rate.
Yeah, I find Ilias Samsonov's been very, very interesting in this series. There's been like moments where Florida is complete, like a little 5-minute segment, I think, in both games where Florida's all over them. Maybe they hit some posts and it's like, wow, Ilias really fortunate to have this game within one, or fortunate for the Leafs to still be leading, or fortunate for the Leafs to still be tied right now. And then, but with that fortune, he makes an unbelievable save to like follow that up or to precede it. And it's like, wow, Ilias doing his part. It's like, it's kind of just, you know, Bobrovsky's been one save better this entire time. And if you're one save better, well, that's going to, you know, result in wins and losses come playoff time when it comes to goaltender matchups. What do you make of Mitch Marner so far in these playoffs? And I guess more specifically against the Florida Panthers. I mean, I think he's kind of skirting criticism just a little bit. He has the great moment on the power play. He has a moment of error exacerbated by what Austin Matthews did in open ice. I just don't feel like this is the Selke Mitch. I don't feel like it's the Mitch who took over and was clearly the MVP throughout large portions of the regular season. I still feel like there's a lot Mitch Marner can provide the Maple Leafs in this series. But when you look at the stats, when you look at the underlying, it's like, oh, Mitch is doing his job. Where do you land on the Marner argument?
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I don't think that there's been a single game so far this playoffs where I've left it and said Marner was the best player on the ice. And I understand that he had 6 points in his first two playoff games. One of them, the whole team obviously got blown out of the water. And then one of them, I mean, they blew Tampa out of the water, and Tampa kind of just seeded and said, all right, like, we'll take the 1-1 split going back home, given no Hedman and Cernak. So, you know, all that to say is I don't put too much stock into that, but I think you're right. He's completely escaping criticism at the moment. The goal that you're referencing, I mean, I probably went back and watched it 10 times. I don't know how you wrap your head around making a drop pass before your blue line in the NHL playoffs, let alone in round two. I mean, that is just not a thing that you should basically ever do. Like, especially at that. Yeah. Right. Like, I mean, I know Matthews tried to make a play, but Matthews was probably the most shocked person of everyone just to even get that puck. Like, why did you drop me a puck a foot away from the blue line? That's a really bad play. The first goal that Florida scored in game one, Tkachuk kind of comes out from the goal line and Marner like half-heartedly waves his stick at him one-handed, and Tkachuk just steps around it, walks in and shoots, and Cousins puts home the rebound. And it's like, you know, I'm really glad you asked this question, because I know a lot of focus is on Nylander for the second goal, and some validity to it for sure. But if Nylander had made that play in game one that Marner did, it would have been roundtable discussion until game two, right? So, and the thing is they pay Marner a lot more. Marner's making $11 million. I understand the point totals have been there. I see what you're saying about the underlying numbers. You know, their line has had created some offense. I don't think there's been a single game where I've said this is the best player on the ice, and we're now 8 games into the playoffs.
Yeah, I think Justin and I tried to give like equal time to the core four in general. I feel like everybody last night had a moment of weakness. Marner specifically, you mentioned William Nylander with that giveaway too, but then he turned it on right in the third period. So did John Tavares, where he avoided contact on that play. They take a penalty, and then, you know, obviously the Maple Leafs don't get an opportunity to come back in the game, but he played really well in the third. So it's like, it's kind of been the duality of these stars, right? And I think Mitch Marner deserves a little bit of a conversation today. But if we go to William Nylander, I feel like last night's like the perfect representation of why people get frustrated with William Nylander, right? Because he's got that giveaway. He's got the moment where you're like, oh my God, it's just so hard to watch this guy. And then he turns it on and he plays lights out in the third period, right? So I don't know how you try to evaluate a game like that. Like, does it even itself out? Do you see the highs in that third period and think, okay, well, maybe that's the William Nylander that can show up on Sunday? Is there enough positives from the way that they kind of were able to finish the third period that you think that they can sustain that come Sunday?
Yeah, I do think it's positive. I do think what he did in the third period in terms of creating offense, and I thought he was the best player on the team in the third period. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that would be a controversial thing to say. I know people have a feeling one way or another about the guy, but he created a ton in the third. I mean, to me, it felt like he knew he had really struggled to that point, and he kind of, you know, it was one of those games. It was like, yeah, I know what I did here. I need to try to get it back. But in terms of what you're saying about like positivity and bringing that to game three, that was kind of how I felt about it, just in terms of, you know what, I hope he's kind of just said, all right, like, you know, enough of this. Like one, I can create against these guys. They really can't handle him. And two, you know, enough is enough. Like we need to be pushing for goals here. We need to be pushing for offense. Enough of whatever we've been at to this point in time. So I hope it kind of demonstrates to him. The reality is Matthews and Marner together are going to get Forsling and Ekblad. Florida has zero other options, which means Nylander is going to play against Mark Stahl a lot. You know, he might get some Radko Gudas. A little bit of Brandon Montour will be on the ice, but they're on different sides of the ice. I mean, that makes him a significant X factor in the series. He needs to eat those guys alive. He should be eating those guys alive. Like, Mark Stahl cannot skate with William Nylander, obviously. So I kind of hope it was a bit of a wake-up call, and he's able to carry it over into game three. That's obviously the positive way of looking at things. But to be honest, I feel like if he keeps getting those chances, eventually one is going to go in, and hopefully it just kind of breaks the dam.
Where do you land on Sheldon Keefe? Was he an innocent bystander last night? I thought that he had a really questionable game one. I don't know if you can pinpoint anything in game two, but I think there are real questions still about him being outcoached, if he's the best coach for this team, if he's making the best of a roster that's clearly better than the one on the other side. How do you think Sheldon Keefe has performed specifically in this series, but also in the playoffs this year as a whole?
Well, I think this kind of goes back to our original point of they haven't really played the way that they played all season. And I get the playoffs are different, and I get that things do change, but not to this extent. Like, I don't know. We talked about Marner, and to me, he hasn't really done much in this series at the end of the day. And he's playing like 25 minutes a night. And it feels... What's happened so far this series, to me, feels a lot like what's happened every other playoff series, minus the Tampa series, where two guys have had a ton of ice time, the team hasn't scored, everyone's sitting back saying, you know, they got a ton of chances, it is what it is. And he's playing into that hand with how he's kind of run things so far, right? Like, the reality is they didn't even, like, outplay Tampa. Tampa outplayed them. Steven Stamkos said it best after that series, right? He was like, I actually thought we played better in this series than we did the last time we played them last year. We just didn't get the bounces. So I think, you know, all of that kind of comes into question about validity of the coaching staff and how he can make adjustments. He has a ton of options at his disposal, just given all the forward depth that they have. And the only real thing that he's put together against Florida is, I'm just going to play our top five guys a ton. And that's about it. So, you know, I think that's a little bit problematic. I don't think, though, that some of the, I guess I'd still call it like a little level of immaturity in the team's game. Like, I think part of that is the core, right? Like, they're getting rope-a-doped right now. Like, we all know what Florida's doing to them. And I think part of that is just like the team itself. Like, they have to take some responsibility. I don't agree with the way that he's run the forward group and stacked it so high. I don't agree going into game one and thinking, yeah, I'm going to put a John Tavares-led line when I have Austin Matthews and Ryan O'Reilly, but I'm going to put the John Tavares line against Sam Bennett and Matthew Tkachuk. I just, logically, I don't think that makes much of any sense. So I think he takes a good share of blame. And obviously, if the series keeps going the way that it does, even though they won round one, I don't think he's out of the public eye and the doghouse just yet.
I mean, he's got a pretty important decision as well coming Sunday about what to do with the defense as well. He really touched on the forwards, but Giordano has been definitely an area of concern. I think as we get deeper into the playoffs, we see less and less impact. Seems like he's the oldest guy on the ice, as we mentioned, and like that's a factual thing, but it's starting to become an area of concern. And so I wonder if Justin Hall's in and Mark Giordano's out, or is that too difficult of a decision to take your veteran back end presence out? Like, do you think that Sheldon Keefe will go and play that card pre game three?
If I think he's going to do it, I would say no. But should he do it?
Yeah.
I thought he should have done it in game two. I thought Giordano clearly struggled in game one. I thought he clearly struggled against Tampa. And now you're looking at an 0-2 hole to be like, you're coming out of the lineup, which is an even tougher spot for everybody involved. Mm-hmm. So I thought game two was a good call, because the worst thing that could happen is you'd be in the situation that they're currently in, which is down 0-2. So I still think it's very much on the table. I don't know if Erik Gustafsson's getting enough play for the possibility of him getting in the lineup. And I understand what the guy's like in his own end, but isn't this series kind of tailor-made for Erik Gustafsson? Like, this is Erik Gustafsson hockey.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely an argument there, because, you know, if you're able to successfully shelter, and that would be more difficult, clearly, in Florida, I do feel like there's, you know, a good portion of if Matthew Tkachuk's out there against him, it could be a complete disaster. But if you can keep him away from that line, I do think he can survive and at least give you some of the puck moving that you've been without with Mark Giordano on the ice so far.
And I mean, you were there. Anyone watching, really, it was like, if Morgan Riley's not on the ice in the third period, I mean, you've felt nothing about the defense and their ability to, you know, watching McCabe try to chop it up, and they moved Brody with Riley, and they really just had nothing beyond Morgan Riley on the point. And that's just the limitations of the group that they're running. I mean, that's just not their game, right? I mean, maybe you could squint and say Liljegren can kind of contribute, although I didn't think I think he got kind of bullied a little bit last night in his own zone. So you kind of watch and go, is Erik Gustafsson the worst thing right now? Because he would throw pucks on net. He's at least, he legitimately is dynamic on the offensive blue line. I know you went to Hull. I think that would be a different discussion in relation to Liljegren, for me anyway. And I just look at Gustafsson and say, I think he could create something for them. Like, they're not scoring right now, and he's not a goal scorer per se, but he's an offense creator, especially in the type of game where the Leafs are just creating a lot of chances. They get things off the rush. You know, they're having long stretches where they can pin Florida in their own zone. And again, other than Riley and somehow Luke Shen, apparently, they're just getting like nothing from the point.
What's your take on Brody and McCabe? I mean, obviously, if you're a shutdown pair, you're going to be doing some defending, and they are certainly doing some defending, and they're, you know, picking pucks out of their own net too. Like McCabe, you know, his offensive instincts clearly lacking. Unfortunately, he's been the guy who's had chances and has been in spots where he can either make a pass or take a shot at the net, and it seems like he's not making the right reads there. But like, do you think there's something going on with Brody? Why it hasn't worked out to maybe the way they thought? Maybe we're just asking too much for a shutdown pair to just be cleanly exiting the zone and neutralizing the opposition's best at all times. Like, what's your read on those two?
Yeah, I think they're just a solid if unspectacular pairing, right? I know it was very common for people to, when they acquired Jake McCabe, to say, oh, this is the quote-unquote Muzzin replacement. Jake Muzzin was an exceptional hockey player. I mean, like he played on Team Canada. Like, he won a cup. Like, he was a legitimate top-pairing defenseman and a needle-moving player. And if you go back to my saddest things of the playoff defeats of years past, is they just wasted prime Muzzin to me. And you go look back at those games, Muzzin was very good. He was often, when everyone else was a no-show, Muzzin along with Riley were two of the guys you could sit there and say they stepped up and delivered and played really well. So, I mean, that's a really hard player to replace. You know, Muzzin was 6'4". He brought some offense. He had, you know, obviously some grind and defensive chops to his game. Like there's a lot to love about Muzzin. It's unfortunate how his career's ending here. And McCabe doesn't replace that. And Brody's kind of been like this in the playoffs, really, since they've had him, where he's quiet and he's steady, but he doesn't necessarily make any sort of needle moving, difference making plays, at least offensively with the puck. Defensively, he's solid. I think McCabe is kind of, I don't want to say McCabe's put him in a tough spot, but McCabe's put himself in a tough spot at times, just making plays, right? Like, a lot of focus, of course, we talked about Nylander on the second goal of the game, but like, they won that opening faceoff and McCabe iced it for no reason. Mm-hmm. And then Ryan O'Reilly won the faceoff again to him in the defensive zone. And he, again, did not make a pass out of the zone. Like, he, like, fanned on the puck and then basically just batted at it. So, you know, and he wasn't under much pressure. There wasn't, you know. So I think, yeah, probably our expectations of what can that pairing really do is it shouldn't be that high other than, like, don't get scored on. But obviously that's been happening.
Well, a lot of decisions for Sheldon Keefe to make down the stretch and a lot of pressure on these guys. I mean, if anyone's done it, the Florida Panthers did it, so they can just look across the ice and think, well, if it can be done, this is the playoffs where strange things have happened. So I appreciate you joining us this morning. Enjoy the rest of the series, and hopefully we get a lot more games down the stretch here.
Thanks for having me.
That's Anthony Petrelli, writer for Maple Leafs Hot Stove and Yahoo Sports Canada.
One option, I think, and I don't know if they'll do it. I mean, I don't expect them to do it. You could split up that shutdown pair, that quote-unquote shutdown pair, because TJ Brody can play the left side. So if you're looking for someone to replace Mark Giordano on the left side, you could drop Jake McCabe into a lesser role, play him maybe with Timothy Liljegren, Justin Hall, play TJ Brody with Justin Hall. I mean, there are definitely options. But
remember when they said Mitch Marner could play D? Why don't you just toss him back?
Remember that? Like, what?
That was hilarious. Remember those were early on in the season moments.
Like, whatever. Like, is it to like test drive him on the power play, kind of, and make sure he can play?
So funny.
It's just like that is Sheldon Keefe overthinking to a T, isn't it? Like, how long did he spend thinking about that over the summer, and how much of an influence has that been on actually meaningful games? Zero influence. But yeah, like, Jake McCabe and TJ Brody, I don't think has been what they envisioned in their head. And if you want to balance out some of these defense cores a little bit, maybe make things a little bit easier, maybe split up two problems so that you don't have one giant problem as one of your defensive pairings, I think that's another thing they could consider, is splitting up McCabe and Brody for game three.
Well, since it's so easy to be a head coach, let's do that for something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats. Yum, yum, yum.
Yum, yum, yum.
The Milwaukee Bucks decided to go a separate way with their head coaching decisions. Mike Budenholzer fired after five seasons, and obviously the first round exit that we just saw from the Bucks, after leading them to a title in 2021, and it's not been a favorable time for head coaches who have won championships recently. 2019, head coach of the Raptors, championship, Nick Nurse, fired. 2020, Frank Vogel, head coach of the Lakers, who won a championship, fired. And the 2020 head coach of the Bucks, Mike Budenholzer, fired. So the last three of four NBA head coaches to win a championship have been fired. The other one, Steve Kerr, better be on watch.
I think he'll be okay.
I think he's okay this time around. But yeah, and Giannis said this season was not a failure, right? Bucks might have thought differently.
Yeah, I fear that Nick Nurse is too perfect for the Milwaukee Bucks.
Oh, he's certainly going to be considered. It's no doubt.
It makes almost too much sense.
We wanted to see Nick Nurse coach Giannis in Toronto, but he might be coaching Giannis in Milwaukee.
He was always destined to coach Giannis Antetokounmpo.
We'll see how this shakes out, but tough. You're not safe. You win a ring and you can be out the door 2 years later.
Them's the breaks.
All right. We want to hear from you, Leafs Nation. We've been waiting. We've been patiently getting to 7:30 to chat with you. We could use a little therapy this morning. We could use a little, I don't know, perspective. But we're going to hear from you on the other side of the break with our Leafs hotline at 416-870-0590 or 1-888-666-0590 or *590 on your Rogers cell phone. You can get in the queue now. Want to hear your thoughts, your feelings, your vibes down 0-2, headed to Florida, Sunday night, game three. How are you feeling about your Toronto Maple Leafs? We'll chat with you on the other side of the break.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The JD Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan Morning Show. It's Sportsnet 590, The Fan. What would have been a feel-good Friday has now turned into a freak-out Friday. Cinco de Mayo, though, so get a little tequila in you. Maybe not at 7:37, but it's 5 o'clock somewhere. Folks, we are taking your calls this block. We want to hear from you, our loyal Leafs Nation. Our Leafs hotline is open at 416-870-0590, 888-666-0590, or star 590 on your Rogers cell phone. We're breaking it down. 0-2, headed down to Florida. It's been done. It hasn't been done often, but it has been done. Teams have come back from down 0-2. Just get two quick wins, and we're back in it.
Yeah, the opportunity is still there. I still think they're the better team. I still think they have the better roster. They just got to go out there and finally show that that matters.
Well, let's fire it up with our first caller, Jay in Georgetown, joining us this morning. Jay, welcome. You get to kick things off this morning. How are you feeling?
Not very happy in Leafland today, that's for sure.
Let's talk it out, Jay. What's going on?
Okay, a couple of quick observations from last night. You probably know the stats being down 0-2 in playoffs. I think it's like 17% success rate.
It's poor.
So by the stats, and we're all stats guys these days, doesn't look good. But my main takeaway from last night was Knies. I mean, don't get me wrong, he was a good college player, you know, college being more shinny than anything, and it showed last night. Somebody like Sam Bennett, not really a tough guy, to manhandle him and put him out, he's too soft right now, and they got to put somebody in there, you know, like Bunting. They kept Bunting out. Wow, we need Bunting. We saw the what Bunting took last night. So, you know what, nice, good shinny player, but not prime time ready. Other than that, they got to find a way to get more people in front of Bobrovsky. Mm-hmm. He's seen the puck too easily. That's all, but you know what? Yeah, I believe.
All right. Okay, well, Jay.
All right, have a great
thanks,
day.
Jay.
Happy Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah, happy Cinco de Mayo. a lot of things there. Put some respect on NCAA. I'm wearing my Dartmouth hat this morning. No shinny here. It's all right. I mean, obviously, he's a college kid. I don't think if we're relying on Matthew Knies, and this is maybe a testament to, like, the depth that we need, he has been really impressive, I think. I don't know if I completely agree with that, but
I will say that Florida, I think, maybe saw it the same way a little bit as Jay. Like, they targeted two guys. Mm-hmm. They have targeted two guys for, I don't want to say physicality and verbal assaults, but, like, Matthew Knies has been hearing it, heard it from Tkachuk, scored a goal immediately, has now been manhandled and maybe removed from the series, or at least temporarily. And John Tavares also, like, every time they get a chance to talk to John Tavares and Matthew Knies, they were doing it. I don't know if those are, like, the pressure points,
well,
the weak points.
You pick the kid that hasn't been in this moment before with Matthew Knies.
They're trying to remind him that he's not ready for it, just the same way that Jay said. Mm-hmm. And I don't think getting hurt means you're not ready for it. I don't know if he was ready for the suplex that came his way. but I feel like he has shown himself to be capable. Mm-hmm. He just got injured because Sam Bennett did something that's clearly outside of the rules.
Let's see if we'll see him back in the lineup Sunday, but some roster decisions nonetheless with that. Mark in Brampton joins us next. Mark, what's your vibe check on this Friday morning?
Hey guys, oh boy, that
Mark, we got you,
Mark.
Hey.
Oh, yep, sorry, yep. You start again, Mark. Sorry, we cut you off. How's it going?
That's okay. I said that first call really set the vibe, didn't it? I mean, it's just this is part of the problem with where we go with Leafs Nation. It's either we're finding a short bridge and going in for a long walk, or we're immediately winning the Stanley Cup. Mm. I'm a diehard. I was in Tampa. I'll be off to Florida tomorrow morning. You know, yeah, guys, and Ailton, I had a pleasure meeting you at one of the games last week against Tampa, and it was a pleasure to meet you. But here's the frustration that I have, okay, and the frustration that I carry is that playoffs are as much about luck as anything, okay? People talk about Samsonov being, you know, not looking, you know, perfectly sound in his net. I'm sorry, but Bobrovsky hasn't looked perfectly sound in his net either. There's a lot of times he's flopping for pucks. There's a lot of times that he's scrambling. Lady luck is a big factor. And in the first two games, we've had some pulls that have been missed. We've had some pucks find their way through and not find their way across the line. You know, they say the harder you work, the luckier you get. And I'm not sure they're centering Knies. I'm not sure they're centering Tavares. I think those guys have just gone into the dirtier areas at times to try and get the puck or proceed with the play and found themselves in an opportunity where guys are going to line them up a little bit more. They're sacrificing themselves a little bit more than some of the other guys. Willie Stiles last night started to create time and space for himself and just couldn't, you know, every time he'd come through the puck, through the neutral zone, the puck seemed to stick to him and he seemed to find his way through three or four guys. He hasn't had the opportunity to bury him. Matthews, who I'm the biggest fan of, you know, makes an absolute, you know, not the brightest play, but where's Mitchie been so far? I mean, aside from those first two games, everybody's talking about how great he's been, but of his 11 points, how many points did he have the first two games? How many primary assists is he getting? Guys, they got to drive through a little harder. They've got to be able to go through those half boards and be able to win the battles for the puck, because that's where these games are won. And so far, we just haven't seen it. Coach Keefe can only prepare his team so much. I mean, he had them ready to go yesterday. They came out hard. They gave up a goal at the end of the first, which I think was not enough people are talking about, because that really set the pace going into the second period, because to me, that's where the moment changed. So we'll see what happens in Tampa. I'm confident that this team can do it if they want to. The question is, how bad do they want it?
All right, Mark, appreciate your call in and your thoughts. Enjoy the trip to Florida. Hopefully you can bring some good vibes. And it sounds like you secured some tickets somehow through maybe a shady back-end site, because you weren't selling it.
At the very least, the Leafs have provided two opportunities to go to Florida when we have no sunlight at all. So that's at least a good thing.
I appreciate that. Lots to unpack there.
Yeah, I mean, I think the good point is, like, you know, hard work does create luck, and this is a high-variance game. But on the flip side of that is, you know, sloppy, poor decisions that creates the opposite of luck, I guess, which is bad luck. That's exactly what happened. Again, we talked about a lot of good, a little bad, and the bad, you know, overshadowing all the good that you did. And yeah, I mean, those are momentum things. It's like being on at all times. It's putting energy in the right way at all times. And when you make those slip ups, it does loom large.
Okay, we got lots of calls to get through. So 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, or *590 on your Rogers cell phone. We want to hear from you for the next little while. So call in on our Leafs hotline. Let's head to Norman in St. Catharines. St. Kitts, is vibes high or low this morning, Norman?
Low, very low.
Where are you feeling the worst this morning?
I haven't seen a team play so bad. Like, I mean, they got lucky six games. Now we're down to, I've never seen, like, really eight games they played like crap. I mean, you guys have been talking about certain players, you know, not doing their job. They're like children. They almost got to be taught every practice, every shift, every game. Like, the last period they played, that was Toronto. I mean, I can be on my couch and be a coach, but that was the Toronto Maple Leafs. What do they do all year? I mean, they just totally, I don't know, they're just out of sync. The whole team is out of sync. Look at the passes out of their end. You got the guys coming forwards, coming back to defend. How can they make a play? They're tired from defending constantly. You know, like, it's just the whole team. They're not vibing, and I just, you know, like I said, I can be a armchair coach, but hopefully they can do it in Florida.
Yeah, well, appreciate it, Norman. I think consistency is the main thing. Who's been consistent? The Florida Panthers, since getting down to the Boston Bruins. They've strung off some real great performances. They're riding a wave of confidence. Once you can string together period after period of feeling good and winning and getting the bounces, yeah, that's important. And having goaltending that's standing on their head and playing, outplaying your team on the road as well. I think it's all confidence and it's a consistency. And the Maple Leafs don't seem to have that right now.
I've been frustrated with Sheldon Keefe, but boy, he must be frustrated with his team. Again, baffling. No answers for that start. It's, you know, especially after how they played in the first period, for the second period to start that way, kind of just throw your hands up in the air and be like, what else can we do? Because you can only be in control of so much.
Okay, we got some more calls to go through here. Doug in Port Perry joins us this morning. How are you doing this morning, Doug?
Absolutely fantastic. And how are you two?
I think we're working our way to being fantastic. Is that sarcasm?
I listen to you guys every morning. You obviously know about hockey. Why are you shocked?
I don't know.
I gotta tell you a story.
Tell
1967,
us.
My dad put me to bed. Stanley Cup playoff game. I was so bad, and he looked at me and he said, "Son, there'll be so many more." I'm still waiting. I am still waiting. I have four granddaughters. They won't even watch the Leafs. Mm-hmm. I love them, but I don't know why everybody's in shock.
It felt like it might be different.
All the years I've watched this great game, there's two leagues. There's two seasons. Regular season. We have the best pond hockey team in the regular season. It's so pretty to watch. Then it's playoff time, and this team just doesn't have that playoff players for it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some validity to that. I mean, the truest playoff performers take very little time off, right? Are consistent, don't make the mistakes, don't need a kick in the ass that we can just surmise happened in the second intermission when William Nylander and John Tavares were suddenly different players. Like, consistency is the thing. And maybe that's fallen by the wayside a little bit. I mean, the Colorado Avalanche weren't anything close to consistent this year. Maybe they just lost enough where they couldn't hold that standard anymore. But you think of the teams that did it over and over, the Crosby teams, the Chicago teams, it was in the DNA. Consistent. It wasn't lulls. It wasn't convincing. It was night in, night out, expect the same thing, same standard, gets it done. This team,
killer instinct, Justin. I hate to bring it up.
This team rides a roller coaster over and over and over again.
That guy sounded like Joe Bowen's brother.
He's the guy that I think about. The kid who was put to bed in 67.
Doug and poor Perry.
And has been waiting since 67.
Yeah. He's holding the grudge there. All right. Got a little bit more time to hear from you at 416-870-0590 or 1-888-666-0590 or *590 on your Rogers cell phone. Let's head over to Todd in Toronto. Todd, how are we feeling this morning?
Disappointed.
Yeah. Where does that stem from? I know there's probably a list, but what's at the top?
My observation is it's becoming painfully clear that Tampa wasn't a very good team. Mm. And, you know, we're all running around talking about how great we are and that we beat Tampa Bay. But the truth is, sports franchises, you know, teams that are dominant for many, many years and that win championships, it comes to an end. And I think we just got them at the end of their lifespan. So I don't think we really accomplished much in the first round except history. And I think we're now getting exposed to a healthy team, a fast team. And I think that all the things that concerned us about the team and its structure and its lack of defense is being exposed now.
All right, Todd, thanks for the call in.
Well, that's the danger, right? Like, I've heard people be like, okay, you know who you're going to play in this division, right? You know you're going to get Tampa. You should gear yourself towards Tampa. You should be thinking about Tampa, getting players that are going to help you at the deadline for Tampa. But it's not best laid plans immediately. Florida takes out Boston. It's like, oh, this is a completely new challenge. Were we ready at all for this challenge? Mm-hmm. I would say Sheldon Keefe wasn't ready in game one. And now I think in game two, the players have shown that they weren't ready in their own right.
Our next caller, Brendan in Port McNichol, I think has a similar bone to pick with line matching and Sheldon Keefe. Brendan, how's it going this morning?
I'm not too bad. How are you guys?
Oh, we're working through it. What's on your mind this morning?
I don't understand why we have, like, three amazing lines and we're trying to line match with lower talent. Like, I can't even say his name. If Tkachuk's on the ice, throw Matthews out there. Make him do something. Like, we're a better team than them. We don't need to line match. It's driving me nuts.
Brendan, appreciate it. I think that's something we brought up here quite a lot.
That was my biggest point after game one.
Yeah.
And I think they did. I think they got away from that. I think it was Ryan O'Reilly mostly was what they wanted to do. But then it was just, hey, let's send our best players over the boards in the entire third period. And guess what? If you just attack, and again, score effects, we can talk about all that, but the plan was half-baked. The second and fourth
line. Do
you
think Paul Maurice cares? He just plays. He just puts the guys out there.
And he's in an easier spot to do that, right? But no, he doesn't care. Again, he's trying to hunt down advantageous matchups, not matchups where it's like that, oh, got to take Matthew Tkachuk off the ice because Austin Matthews is coming on. That's not the way he's thinking. That's the way Sheldon Keefe approached this series. And you know what happens when you always have a bad game plan to start a series and you give up game one all the time? Eventually, you can't come back in the series.
Yep.
And now it's two. The margin for error was so thin because you had a terrible approach to game one. You lose game two, and now we're in dire straits.
I wonder how different it'll look when Paul Maurice has home ice advantage come Sunday, because this was a thing of major focus. Sheldon Keefe had that here. Maybe it played against him. Scotiabank Arena, you're tinkering too much. Now they go to Tampa or Florida, whatever, Sunrise, and they have not that card to play. So maybe it changes the way they deploy. Gary and Whippy's en route to the cottage. Can you swing by and pick us up, Gary? How's it going?
Absolutely. I hope your bags are packed.
I wish. How's it going this morning?
It's terrible. It's terrible. My comment here isn't my own.
Okay.
On this very radio station about 9-10 years ago on the amazing Fan 590, Scotty Bowman was the guest. And the host at the time, I won't mention his name, asked him, Mr. Bowman, you're the greatest hockey coach of all time. Tell us, the average fan and listener, what we don't know about winning Stanley Cups and championships. And again, Scotty Bowman, not me, said, people forget how much luck there is in sports and hockey. And if you look at last night's game, and trust me when I say I don't believe my Toronto Maple Leafs were the better team against Tampa. We had a few lucky breaks. But last night, Scotty Bowman is 1,000% correct, teaching us commoners. We hit 5 posts last night. This had nothing to do with Bobrovsky standing on his head. This has a lot to do with luck, puck luck. 5 of those easily next game could go off the bar and in. And Scotty Bowman, again, is the most decorated, winningest coach of all time. And if he believes that there is so much luck involved, a bad call, a missed call, a bad bounce, we have to trust Scotty Bowman, not this clown driving to the cottage on a Friday when he should be working.
Well, Gary, enjoy the trip up. We'll be waiting outside One Mount Pleasant with our bags, so just come on by.
How did Scotty Bowman get so lucky then? Was it just luck for Scotty
with
all those cups?
Just a shout out. Gary's been listening for at least 9 years. Yeah, loyal guy.
Gary.
Thanks, Gary. There's some good bounces in that first round. The tarot cards, we maybe need to check with the spirits, the hockey gods. Did they peace out for round two? Or are they waiting? Because there's still some chance. I think our next caller, Michael and Barry, he says everyone needs to relax. Good things are coming for Leafs Nation. Michael, you're rounding up our show this morning. So how's it going?
I'm amazing. How are you guys?
Oh, we're great. Thanks for calling in.
No problem. All I got to say to Leafs Nation, everyone needs to relax. We dealt with Tampa. We'll deal with Florida in 6. Let's go.
Okay, there you go. Leafs in 6. Michael and Barry said it here first. A Cinco de Mayo shout out to all the vibes that are going on here. Michael brings some good ones to wrap up our calls. Appreciate it. And he said Leafs in 6, so we'll call him next week.
R-E-L-A-X. The relaxed approach might not be the best approach in Tampa, but this thing isn't over yet. Michael's right.
Yeah, that's why it's a 7-game series. There's still an opportunity. The numbers aren't great. One of our callers pointed it out. But stranger things have happened this Stanley Cup playoff run, have they not? Nothing's been predictable, really.
No, nothing was predictable in the game ones, I suppose. But you'd hope things would normalize in game two. I mean, the Dallas Stars got the job done, but the Maple Leafs are the ones still chasing that normalization, I suppose. But yeah, Florida 3-1 down to Boston, longer odds than the Leafs 2-0 down to Florida.
And in case you weren't listening earlier this morning, on some books, the Florida Panthers have the top odds to win the Stanley Cup this morning.
I will not be rushing to bet that.
No. Happiness Hedge, maybe? No, not here. All right, well, thanks everyone for calling in. We didn't get to everybody because so many people were fired up this morning, so we appreciate it. We'll get to you as much as we can next week, hopefully post some wins so we get a longer series ahead. But thanks for calling in this morning. We're going to do this as many times as we can. And while we're at it, to round up, Michael left us on a good note. Let's send everyone out to break on a good note as
well.
Aerosmith's coming to Scotiabank Arena on September 12th as part of their Peace Out, the Farewell Tour with special guest The Black Crowes. We've been giving away tickets all week long. Today's the last day, and we're giving away another set. The final code word, texted into 590-590, is Seasons of Wither.
Oh.
Seasons of Wither.
Yeah.
I don't like this one. Text this to 590-590 right now for your chance to win. If you don't win with us today, make sure you just visit Ticketmaster.ca to secure your tickets starting at 10 a.m. today. Seasons of Wither. Season space of space. Wither space.
We've gone from dream space on to Seasons of Wither.
It's getting worse.
But the show will be great. Season of Wither to get yourself Aerosmith tickets.
All right. Final hour on this Friday morning. Jason Bukla joins us next. He was a former director of amateur scouting for the Florida Panthers, so he knows how this team's constructed. Let's break it down with him on the other side of the break.